Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know, the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Yes, that's a terrible imitation of Paul Simon singing his hit, Slip Sliding Away. But how appropriate is that to the weather that we have had the last few days? So I thought I'd lay it on you. So now you have to deal with the singing car guru, right? There used to be a, you remember that, was it a Broadway play or something? The Singing Nun? Or was there a movie? I recall that from my youth. I do remember the Flying Nun. I think that was Sally Field, wasn't it? Where she had that weird looking hat with wings and she could fly around. I'm surprised. You wonder if something like that would go on today's television with all the Marvel superheroes and stuff. She could be one of the extra Marvel superheroes. Who knows? I'm just thinking out loud. So as we slide away, I've had several conversations this week, one with a salesperson of mine who said, Lenny, what exactly is the difference between four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive? And I said, well, you should probably know that, but I'm glad you asked so that I will enlighten you on that. And some of you out there may wonder, you know, when you see the little label on the hindquarters of a, I don't know, maybe a Honda Pilot or something like that that says AWD or all-wheel drive, you know, that's kind of a reminiscent of the past. I remember when Honda first came out with the, was it the Civic or the Accord? They would put, like if it had an automatic transmission, they would put on the left rear quarter of the car, they would put the word automatic. You know, that's really kind of irrelevant after you buy the vehicle. I mean, the owner knows it's an automatic. He drives it every day. I guess they wanted people that were behind you to know that you can buy a Honda Accord with an automatic, because I guess, I know that probably 40%, maybe 30% of all Honda Accords were sold with manual transmissions. That was the thing back then when you had that extra pedal and you had to push it in. But, you know, this all-wheel drive thing can be kind of confusing. What does it mean? Well, typically you're going to see all-wheel drive on a vehicle that is basically front-wheel drive and also has a transfer case that will send power to the rear wheels and basically allow them to start turning under power as well. So what does that do? Well, that gives you additional traction. It is not 100% foolproof, especially on sheer ice, but all-wheel drive does work a whole lot better than just front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive. Now, the Ford Explorer, you know, it's always had a button that you could push. And if it has a button or a knob or a lever that you have to push, then that vehicle is considered to have four-wheel drive. I know, but both things are four-wheel drive, but one of them goes in automatically with no input from you. In other words, when your right front tire on a front-wheel drive car with all-wheel drive starts to spin, your car's computer is going to send a signal to the transmission to engage the transfer case and send power to the rear wheels, and gives you additional traction that you may need. So all-wheel drive is great. My wife, for some time, has driven a Lincoln Continental, which has all-wheel drive. And that thing will just go just about anywhere. Now, it still has highway tread tires, and, you know, there are limitations. But all-wheel drive is great, not only in the snow and ice. I mean, it's great. You can lose traction anytime, right? I mean, you can go around a curve, and your rear end kind of come loose, and you put your foot on the gas. Front-wheel drive will normally straighten you out. If you've got a rear-wheel drive car, you're going to keep spinning and could end up in the ditch. All-wheel drive also will keep you going straight. And you combine all-wheel drive with dynamic stability control. That's another feature that is standard on all vehicles now. Didn't used to be, but it is now. So if you have any new car, probably newer than, I don't know, 2006, 2007, It's got dynamic stability control. And what made that possible was analog brakes. When you had four-channel, four-wheel analog brakes, that's what makes your stability control work. In addition, you can have, well, a lot of cars have this computer to kind of takes over as far as the wheel. When it senses a wheel spinning, it'll send power to the other wheel. With analog brakes and dynamic stability control, it actually will use braking as well to help the car stabilize. There's this thing on a car called a yaw sensor, and it knows when you're going straight down the road in the direction you intend to go. So you have your steering wheel straight, and all of a sudden the yaw sensor reacts and sends a signal to the computer that the steering wheel's straight, but the car is kind of starting to go sideways. Then that's what activates the stability control. Isn't that cool? It saved a lot of lives. And so anyway, that is one of the many features that works in slick weather. All-wheel drive, dynamic stability control, those things make a difference. Now, if you have four-wheel drive, then you have to make the conscious decision to engage it. So like yesterday when I was coming out the driveway, you know, I like to spin around a little bit first. I'm not intimidated by a spin. I'll tell you one time I was, but under normal circumstances, I think it's a little kind of fun, and I get a feel for the road that way. And then if I feel it's a little too dangerous, a little slick, then I'm going to engage probably the four-wheel drive. However, if it's real patchy, you know, like there's some ice and there's some dry patches, then I'm not going to put it in four-wheel drive because that can basically create some additional wear and tear on the systems. So I'm just going to put it in four-wheel A, which is four-wheel automatic on my F-150. So it just says 4A. And the other choices are 4H, which is 4 high, and 4L, which is 4 low. Only time you'd use low is if you're out in a field or you're stuck in mud or something like that. And that'll keep you from burning up your transmission. But 4 low is a creepy crawler kind of a gear that makes your car probably won't go over 40 miles an hour if it's floored because it lowers the gearing. But on 4 high, you know, normal speeds, but you don't need that if you are if you have patchy kind of ice in different places and dry patches. So just put it on 4A. And then it works like all-wheel drive. On an F-150, for example, it's a rear-wheel drive vehicle, meaning the power is going to the rear wheels most of the time. No power going to the front wheels. But when you need to engage the four-wheel drive or it does it automatically, then the front wheels start spinning under power. And that's why, you know, I can go just about anywhere in my truck. So these are considerations that when you're buying a vehicle, you need to think about that. You don't see many two-wheel drive trucks sold in East Tennessee. If you go to Atlanta or South, you'll see a lot more of that. As the further south you get, the people realize, well, I don't need four-wheel drive. I'm never on the beach, and I don't ever go to the mountains. Then there's no reason to have it if it doesn't snow. But boy, when it does snow and you get nasty weather, those people freak out. So just remember, all-wheel drive is on demand, basically, whenever it senses any kind of slippage, it's going to go in. You can't switch it into four-wheel drive. It's going to do it when it senses any type of sliding around. Four-wheel drive is something that you have to decide to put it into. So that is the basic fundamental difference. And if you already knew that, I'm sorry for the last 8 minutes. But there's some people just need to have that explained to them. Let's say you buy a Honda Pilot. It's going to have all-wheel drive. Toyota Highlander or the RAV4. Now, if you buy a Toyota 4Runner, it's going to have four-wheel drive because there's a selector there that you have to actually put it in four-wheel drive. Most vehicles that have four-wheel drive have an automatic option, so don't worry about it. But, you know, if you're buying there's some cars that look like SUVs now or crossovers that some people just assume that they have all-wheel drive just because it's an SUV, but don't assume that. You know, make sure if you're out shopping around for them that you ask the salesperson, now, does this have all-wheel drive? Because if it never comes up, then and you buy it and you take it home and you think you had all-wheel drive and you don't, that dealer may not be a nice guy and let you change your mind. And so you're stuck. But front-wheel drive is fine for the most part in this area. If you have a really steep driveway or you just absolutely have to get to your job, like you're a nurse or a, you know, emergency worker or something like that, then I highly recommend the extra $1,200 to $2,500 to get four-wheel or all-wheel drive. It's just, and it's better even when it's raining, you know, in low traction situations. Of course, you don't need it when it's dry, but it is great any other time. So that is a consideration. Think about it next time you go out and shopping for an SUV. All right, we'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute. Well, I have a on-the-air confession to make. I just hope my wife isn't listening. I bought an electric bicycle. Yep, I did. I bought her one last year. And, oh, we had such a good time. But I'm just tired of her smoking me up the hills. And I'm done with it. So I looked around, and I need an extra large bike due to my height and inseam. You know, they base it on your inseam. You got to have those ergonomics right. Otherwise, you'll be uncomfortable on a 30-mile ride. But, you know, we've had a ball just riding. Of course, we haven't been riding much lately, but we're going to. And so this bike is made by Trek. And I decided to go with, you know, I could have gotten something that was lighter weight and much more money. And but the thing about these electric bicycles is they don't do all the work. It's not an electric motorcycle. Get that out of your head. It has four different modes. Each one of those modes requires a different degree of effort. Now, you can go no assistance, or you can go 1, 2, 3, 4. Four is the most, I think it's called turbo, is the most assistance. But you're still doing about 60% of the work, even in turbo. So, you know, it's guilt-free riding. Of course, you know, this will just mean that I'll have to ride more, which is the idea. I mean, the idea is to get out there and, you know, keep the heart pumping, right? And I've been struggling lately with my, you know, keeping up with her on my non-electric bicycles. And so that's over with. I'm going to be able to keep up now. And I think we'll ride more. So I'm a part of the electric revolution now. This thing will go. The one I bought has a little bit more range. It's faster, too, than hers. But it has, it'll go up to 100 miles, which I'm not going to do. You know, I'd say most of our rides will be 25 to 30 miles if we have time. But, you know, we just get out there and ride and talk and, you know, enjoy nature and things. We try to stay away. You know, Greene County is beautiful and a lot of good roads, and we try to stay away from the traffic. And occasionally, you know, we'll have to cross a four lane or something like that. But, you know, it's we're very careful, and you should be too. But if you're interested in doing something like that, gosh, there's so many great places to ride in East Tennessee. So anyway, this isn't called My Bicycle Guru. We'll get on to some car stuff. So the model for selling cars, shopping for vehicles, has officially changed, and it's probably never going to go back. And what I'm talking about is dealer lots, like my 5.5 acres, crammed full of inventory. You're just not going to see that anymore. The manufacturers are telling dealers that your turn rate, meaning the speed at which you turn your inventory, sell your inventory, is going to determine what gets built in your order bank. Now, let's say right now I've got 149 sold orders in my order bank. I told you normally I would have two or three because we typically sold out of inventory or we picked up vehicles from other dealers on dealer trades. I mean, that was such a common experience in the car business, was to, if you didn't have something in stock, you run the locator, you call the dealer who has it, you either trade or buy something he has, and it's no big deal. We traded at invoice price, so the consumer got the same deal, and we could price it the same way. They just had to wait 24 hours to get it. That's over with. I mean, you call another dealer for something, and very rarely will you get a positive response. They'll laugh, horse laugh. And so basically, if you want something, you're going to have to order it. And, you know, forget about finding something online. You can search. I mean, I found my Corvette online. I mean, it can be done. But I paid out the nose for it. But I wanted it, you know, and that's what people will do. I mean, if they want something bad enough, they'll pay for it. And they'll travel a long distance to get it. The last two Broncos that we have sold, now this is the all-new Bronco, were sold in Texas. And, I mean, these people are coming all, well, no, I take that back. They're not coming. They're sending a carrier to pick these vehicles up and take them back to Texas. And that's, so they found them online. And you could possibly do the same thing. But, you know, as a dealer in Upper East Tennessee, I want to retain all the customers that I can. I mean, my goal, I have a market area, okay? That's Greene County, and it goes up into Hawkins County. I don't think it goes into Washington County at all. It may have a little part. It goes over into North Carolina a little bit and down into Cock County. And so I am responsible to sell every Ford or every Nissan that is sold in that area. Well, that's impossible. You know, people are going to, you know, if you live really closer to Morristown than you do to me and you're in my sales area, you don't care. You don't know it's in my sales area, and you don't owe anything to Lenny Lawson unless you've done business with me in the past, and then hopefully you will want to come back. But, you know, that's something I just can't expect to do. However, I'm going to sell a lot of vehicles outside of my market, and those count towards my overall requirement. So what Ford and Nissan want me to be able to do is to sell 85% of my market potential. And so that's what I try to do. And typically we do. We sell more than that most of the time. And it's because so many people come from outside in. Now we're selling, currently, we're selling about 70% of all the Fords and Nissans that are registered in Greene County. We're selling them. So the other 30% is traveling, and not a vast majority, but a lot of them are north of Highway 81, which they're closer to Kingsport and to Morristown than I am. But I'm not fussing about those lines are drawn by computers, and I don't think it's justifiable. But it doesn't matter what I think; that's the way it is. And so I have to make that up on the outside, and thank goodness we do. We have people coming from Texas to buy vehicles from us, from Johnson City and Mountain City and up in Virginia and South Carolina and different places. They come to Greenville, Tennessee, you know, to pick up their new Ford or Nissan. You know, and one of the reasons that we do pretty good with that is simply because we don't charge over MSRP unless it's just a really rare, scarce vehicle even now. You know, if you want an F-150 from me, then you're going to be able to buy it for MSRP or less. If you have a $2,500 mail-in coupon or one of those certificates that Ford sends out, you're going to get that too. And you may even get 0% financing. So what has changed is, I think something that a lot of people have been calling for many years is more level playing field when it comes to pricing. Now, unfortunately, that is close to MSRP, but, you know, a lot of buyers just don't like to negotiate. And if as long as they feel that they're getting a fair deal compared to everybody else, a lot of people feel good with that. That's tough on the guy that's used to buying vehicles every time he buys one, whether he buys a Chevrolet or from Champion or, you know, a Volkswagen from whoever. They're used to paying close to the invoice price. But those days are over. And, you know, some people say, well, good. But others say, well, I'm not getting the deal, you know, that I thought I used to get. But the good thing, as I've said many times, until I'm blue in the face, used car values are still very high, and they're going to continue to be high. That's good for you. And I think that's not only good for you, it's good for the business in general. To be able to buy a car and not worrying about it, you know, depreciating rapidly, that's kind of comforting. You know, there was an old saying, you drive one off the lot, it loses half its value. Not anymore. It might lose 2.7%, if that. I mean, we have some vehicles that are actually gaining in value. So that's a good thing. Okay, we'll take our last break and be back here in just a second. Don't worry, I'm not going to try to sing a conclusion to this radio show. I'm just going to say it. If you have any issues, questions, warranty issues, got some customers, or not customers, listeners, that are sending me some messages about trouble they're running into getting certain problems resolved. And you know what it is? It's parts shortages. It's that the dealership cannot get the parts, and they just want me to verify whether or not that's true. And so, you know, I pick up the phone, I call my Honda dealer friend and say, are you really having a hard time getting these? Yeah, we can't get anything right now. So that's not necessarily the case. But the manufacturers are working, doing everything they can to keep the pipelines flowing as far as parts and accessories. But there are going to be shortages occasionally. And if you have a dealer that is delaying your repair, let's say that you're in a loaner car or something, then hopefully they'll keep you informed of what's going on. But if not, just harass them. You know, just call regularly. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. You ever heard that one? Well, be a squeaky wheel. You know, just don't let your car sit there for a month and nothing happen. If they're not calling you, you be calling them. That's always my recommendation, is be aggressive. Don't be mean. They probably can't help it. But if you get up to the dealer level, he can probably pick up the phone, make a phone call, and get your part quicker than somebody else. I had a situation with a customer of ours that couldn't get a part through my parts department. And I went to the parts manager. I said, who have you called on this one? I said, have you called any other dealers to see if they have the parts? He said, well, no, I was trying to get it from Ford. I said, call some other dealers. We had the part the next day. So sometimes the employees don't go that extra mile. I mean, he normally does, but he didn't in this particular case. But if you don't ask, you will not receive, right? So if you need me, call me, 423-552-2020. Thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru.